AgriCover is celebrating 40 years. Roll-Tec electrocharp conversions feature a rotating and telescoping motor mount to reduce stress with no mid-joint to fail. Multiple options available to accommodate auger and door configurations. Complete your setup with a waterproof AgriCover switch control that comes fully assembled with built-in overload protection. And don't get caught without an AgriCover emergency repair kit for tarp repairs on the go. For more information or to find a dealer near you, call 800-233-4655 or visit AgriCoverTarps.com.
As mentioned, it's July. The humidity is high. I don't know, maybe we should write a song about it or something. Because midsummer weather is here. It's after the 4th of July. You know, in any other given year, would there be widespread heading out of wheat? And this year, it's a little different analyzing crop disease potential, but we're going to do it anyway. North Dakota State University Extension plant pathologist Dr. Andrew Friskup joins us. Hello, Andrew.
Good afternoon, Mick. How are you?
Pretty good. Had a great 4th of July weekend. I assume you didn't work, did you?
I didn't work on paper, but in my mind, I'm always working. So I guess half and half, maybe.
You know, there's a lot of us like that. It's just it's not a problem because, hey, we're always prepared. Because we're always thinking about what's going on out there. So, and what is going on? We had the frequent rain shower, thunder shower, and woke up this morning. Man, it was muggy. I guess what's top of mind for you? What were you thinking about over the weekend when it comes to crop disease?
Yeah, well, I think you kind of opened the show. One is just trying to think about the wheat crop right now. And we have wheat that has a few leaves to wheat that's flowering and heading. So one thing is just, you know, it's not consistent across the state. But regardless, at this time of season, there's one disease that gets brought up most frequently around the 4th of July, and that's Fusarium head blight and scab. And humidity, sporadic rainfall. Looks like the next 4 to 5 days, we're going to have prolonged dew points for a lot of areas in North Dakota. I'm starting to think that we're going to see some scab risk going to start showing up here in the next 7 days or so.
Is the scab map, the Fusarium head blight map, is that operational again?
Yeah, so we have two maps that are available for growers and ag professionals to use. One is the NDSU Small Grains Disease Forecasting scab. Then we also have a national scab risk model that is funded through the U.S. Wheat and Barley Scab Initiative. Both of them are up and running. Both of them are driven by relative humidity values. And currently, as I woke up this morning and checking maps, it says most of our state is in low risk for scab. But I'm a little bit cautious on what I'm thinking is going to happen. Like I said, I got to look at what the future forecast is. Knowing what's happened previously over the last couple weeks, I just think that we're going to start picking up some elevated scab risk here moving forward. So that first wheat crop, I should call it, that might have missed some of that scab risk window. But as we move forward here and as we're starting to monitor those growth stages, I think we're going to be a little bit higher. So basically what I'm saying right now is I think that scab risk is going to be increasing across the state. Just seeing some of the elevated humidity, seeing these sporadic rainfalls, and anything that just kind of makes your skin a little bit sticky, that's more or less what the Fusarium fungus loves to do and starts producing spores at that time.
So earlier today, I was visiting with some extension agents up in northeast North Dakota, and they said the late-planted canola might have escaped the worst of the canola flea beetle because, well, the peak canola flea beetle time has passed. With spring wheat, is the late planted spring wheat, may it escape some of the scab threat, or doesn't it work that way?
No, that's a good question. Planting date always has a big influence on what we think for scab risk. I think that first crop, so to speak, or that really the earliest planted spring wheat this year might have escaped some of the scab risk. Anything that's moving into heading and flowering in the next week to 10 to 14 days, I think it's going to be a little bit higher scab risk. And beyond that, it's kind of tough to tell at this point. But if you want to use kind of historical and knowledge, the further you go into July, generally our scab risk keeps getting a little bit higher.
With the use of fungus, it's more like insurance rather than a cure. Is it too late in some cases, or is it perfect timing for in other cases?
Yeah, when it comes to using management like a fungicide for scab, that timing is one of the most critical factors. So the best time to apply a fungicide in a week is when you start to see those yellow flowers protruding from the center of the head. And based off research we've done over the last 5 years, we have about a 7-day window to make an application. So how I think about it is, if you start to see flowers in your head or in your field on the center of the head, start your stopwatch. You have about 7 days to make an effective application in wheat. And for the barley growers out there, it's a little bit different timing. We have to target full head as being when we want to start that stopwatch. And the same mentality is true, is that you have about 7 days to make an effective application. So when I'm looking at it, timing definitely is one of the biggest factors. And as far as the second component of fungicide selection, we have effective triazoles. We have an effective SDHI on the market. And we do have some options out there to make a good scab application with. But I will warn everybody, you know, it's not a cure. It's not a silver bullet. When you combine that with a moderately resistant variety, you have about 50%, 60% suppression each year.
Well, so don't believe everything you read in the national magazines. The scab risk is not low here in our part of the world. Thank you, Andrew. All right, before we talk about Goss's wilt, let's talk about soybean issues. What could be, and I know this is not under your umbrella of crop disease pathology, but what are some of the soybean issues?
Yes, I guess most of the soybean issues, some of my colleagues right now, I know white mold's been getting brought up. If you talk to Sam Markell, I think he has a pretty good pulse on what he's thinking for some of the white mold issues as we see some of the probably earliest planted soybeans or in some of the Minnesota, you start seeing in those reproductive stages. I know seedling root rots and seedling blights has been another common topic for some of the photos coming into our office. And you know, part of that process is just first step is the disease diagnosis and then trying to figure out where you can go from there.
Okay. All right. On to the big one, Goss's wilt. Is this a year for Goss's in North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota? What do you think?
When I think about Goss's wilt, my counterparts in some of the other states, they don't have as many issues with it. And in North Dakota, even last year, we were finding it in close to 50% of the field. Not to say it was a lot across the field, but it was still here. What I worry about, like years like this, is when you get those high winds and rainfalls and severe thunderstorms, those are big drivers for Goss's wilt. And I think the other contributing factor why we see a lot of it is our July is considered cool to some, and we just have really great conditions for bacteria to grow. So, I think we're going to see quite a bit of Goss's wilt this year as well.
And the thunderstorm threat, because it causes maybe a little bit of damage or injury to the leaf?
Yep. So when we think about Goss's wilt, it's caused by bacterial disease, and they need a little bit more help to get into the tissue. So, you know, high wind, sandblasting, just about anything that can cause injury in the plant is how it gains access. The really good news about Goss's wilt, though, is we have a lot of great hybrids out there that have a great resistance against it, so you can really reduce risk from it. But for those susceptible hybrids, once you start seeing it in the field, there's nothing that you can put on it to help you during that growing season. It's just more of kind of a reminder what to do next year.
Gotcha. All right, Andrew Friskup, NDSU pathologist for crops. Seed treatments, are they getting to be the main fungicide delivery, or are there... is it still the old tried and true sprayer?
Yeah, it depends on your target. We have plenty of foliar fungicides that get applied in the state each year, and they're managing your foliar diseases, managing your head diseases when it comes to scab. Seed treatment, most all your corn is going to have a seed treatment package on it. Wheat, there's a little bit more decision-making process that you can use, but it's really kind of what you think you need to manage in the current year. So if we're using the seed treatment, We're thinking maybe undesirable planting conditions that might stress the plants, especially in my world, that you may need to protect against early season seedling blights. But by far and large, when it comes to some of the most important ones, for wheat and barley, it's definitely Fusarium head blight application. That is probably the most important one. And then in corn, we don't see as many foliar fungicides. And the biggest reason why is we just don't have the fungal diseases that some of our friends to the south have.
Gotcha. All right, Andrew Friskup, NDSU pathologist. Thank you for the insight. It's crop disease season. So, well, hey, we'll see you at a field day around the state.
Yeah, absolutely, Mick. Thanks for the call today.
You are very welcome.